This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing.
For Indie Book Publishing Archway Press, this is J. Douglas Barker. The book is titled Curious Exploits, A Family Seeks Success in 19th Century America. And joining me is the author, Dr. James A. Magner. Welcome to the program, sir.
Thank you.
This is a fascinating book from the cover at first because of the photos that are on it and real people, including a former president. I was kind of the impression, at least initially, that this is something that was very dear to your heart as far as family recounting history. But you tell me it's not. It's over 300 and some pages. Tell me a little of the background of Curious Exploits.
Well, let me start by saying what the book is, and then I can tell you how I decided to write it.
Right.
It's entertaining and informative. Those are were my two goals. And the book relates a 19th century adventure story about a German family settling in the American Midwest in 1846. So the book tells how they succeed by their wits and perseverance. As dangers lurk, love beckons, technology advances occur, and fascinating persons, including Abraham Lincoln and John D. Rockefeller, take a special interest in this family.
Phenomenal.
And some of that is true. It's based on true events.
You mentioned in the pre-conversation or pre-recording that many of the characters in here are, I don't know if the names are correct, but are they? It's based on true events and true characters.
That's correct. One part of this story is that I had elderly relatives die over the years. And as my brother and I cleaned out the houses, we found some long stored and forgotten 19th century family records and photos that came to light. And I realized this is rich, authentic material about my real German ancestors. And could easily be worked into a historical novel. So, I had this sort of unique material, including perhaps some anecdotes about Abraham Lincoln that were not widely known.
Those were in your history? I mean, sorry, in the books, in the historical record that you found in your relatives' possessions?
Or that's was correct. It? I found the records and photographs. In a large old box that was in my father's house. He lived to be 92, a wonderful life.
Beautiful.
And my brother and I cleaned out the house and sold it, and we found all this stuff. Now, I'd written a prior book that was a 19th century adventure story, and at the that book, an abandoned strongbox full of gold coins was discovered, and in the end, they recovered the strong box, and there's a marriage, and everybody lives happily ever after, okay?
Right.
But a lot of people said, that was a great book. You should write a sequel of what they did with the money. So this book, Curious Exploits, is intended to be sort of a sequel to that book. And when I was thinking about the sequel, I thought, well, what I'll do is I'll have a lot of fictional characters, and maybe I could put in three or four true historical people that were my ancestors, and it would be fun to mix them into this fictional historical novel. And as I got to writing, I had more and more actual information that was turning up that was very interesting. And so the opposite occurred. Instead of many fictional characters and a few historical people, it's sort of the opposite. I made the book about many true historical people, and then of course I had to have a few fictional people to carry the narrative.
Well, I've been looking at my family history through ancestry type sites and discovered many things that I was not aware of. One, I, of course, had the impression from my father's side that everybody was of English heritage, Great Britain, perhaps. And some of my history that they've uncovered is going back to the 1700s. And one of my initial great somebody, I think it's my grandfather from who knows where, because I never had a living grandfather, was from England and had a family that was maybe 8 or 10 children, and they migrated to Canada.
Yeah, Canada,
because there was nothing else to do. I don't know what preoccupied their mind. You're a medical doctor. Perhaps you know the reason for that and how it happened. Your book talks about Germany in 1844 is the beginning steps of this novel or this book.
Right.
Did you find anything in doing historical research, or did you have to, or was it all based on your imagination?
Well, no. I spent a lot of time doing research and was greatly aided with some of these little-known details by the personal records I found. So let me just explain briefly sort of the four factors that caused me to write this book, which by the way, I've written other books, and my basic principle is that a book should be fun to read.
I agree.
I mean, it should be interesting and a pleasure to read. Don't write some crazy book that people think they should read, but it's hard to read. So
yes,
this book is fun. So these were sort of the four factors of why I wrote it. First, I was born and raised in Quincy, Illinois, which is a small town on the Mississippi River not far from Mark Twain's Hannibal. But Quincy has its own interesting history of steamboats and also visits to that town by Abraham Lincoln. The second reason is that I lived on the campus of the University of Chicago for 4 years while attending medical school. And that major institution also has a fascinating history involving John D. Rockefeller, its admission of women from the very start in 1892, and its strong academic tradition that has led to important discoveries and advancements in many fields, resulting in Nobel Prizes awarded to many faculty. So I imagined a historical novel that could take place at these two remarkable settings, Quincy, Illinois, and the University of Chicago, and about which I could write with authority and with great factual accuracy. And then I mentioned that I had written a prior 19th century book that needed a sequel, so that was the third reason. And the fourth was what I'd mentioned, that as I was thinking about this, I had family members die, and I got a lot of really unique material to look at, including photographs. So in summary, the stars aligned, and all of these pieces provided the elements of a new fact-based historical novel that follows several generations of the family. It's almost like Yellowstone or something like that.
Mm.
The book starts in Europe, as you mentioned, in a tumultuous German state, Württemberg, in 1844, and shifts briefly to southern Texas, that I'll explain why, and also to Iowa, but then largely focuses at length on this German family that finally, after a bit of wandering, they settled in Quincy, Illinois. And then at the end of the novel, a brilliant and kind young farm girl wins admission to the University of Chicago in 1901. So she faces a lot of challenges as a very smart young lady in the first decade of the 20th century.
Incredible. Now, this book, as you began to write this, besides it being of interest to you personally, did you feel there would be a broad audience to this? Who's your ideal writer? I'm not the writer, but ideal reader of your novel.
The ideal readers. Well, first of all, I told you it's a book that should be fun to read. So hopefully it's a page turner. And so the first category of people who would like it are people who love a good adventure story, and with characters that are likable, responsible, and highly intelligent. And also both male and female characters. And a key point is that these characters use their wits to come out on top. So you have intelligent, likable characters. A second group of people would be people that like to read any sort of carefully researched historical novel. And that can give a reader an authentic, vicarious experience of that time and place.
Beautiful.
People who also want to read something fun, that's not a burden. So that would be another group of people. And then people who are specifically interested in 19th century and early 20th century American history. A lot of people are interested in Abraham Lincoln, the Civil War years, great political struggles, robber barons, assassinations, economic upheavals, and the many technological advances that came along through those decades. And
absolutely. A lot of readers would love to be immersed in this escapism that you have created. Is there, yep. in doing so, did you have a moral to the story as you began crafting this, or is it just something that popped to the surface? What is the one thing that you think a reader will take away from this?
Well, of course, this is a family that left troubled Europe, and in spite of all the new dangers and uncertainties they would face, they were going to take a chance on this wild new country, the United States. And I guess the one thing that this work really tries to make clear is that the United States was a good place to come. In other words, in spite of its flaws, and we hear a lot of criticism of the United States, and you know, the United States has had bad problematic issues in its history. Mm-hmm. But in spite of its flaws, the United States has a remarkable history that has provided creative and ambitious people the opportunity to live interesting lives. In other words, they come here, they fall in love, they raise children, they do meaningful work, they're able to exercise their freedom of religion and their freedom of speech. And coming to the U.S. also gave them the ability to pursue their own interests and to find purpose, and perhaps along the way, make the world a better place.
A beautiful goal for certain. Now, a lot of readers, at least in contemporary United States and even the world, and moviegoers are always looking for that little excitement that might be a part of a reading adventure. Is there anything that's action-packed in your book?
There's a lot. We have the Civil War occurs in the middle of the story. And so let me tell you about the characters and the excitement that they've faced. And you'll get I'm going to speak briefly about the four main characters in the book and what sort of excitement or issues that they've faced. So the head of the family is Martin Metzger. So he was a real person. That's his real name. He's an honest, pragmatic German farmer who immigrates to the United States with his wife and eight children in 1846.
Wow.
It was quite a brood of kids. There were six girls and two boys, and the boys were on the tail end. They were the two youngest children. So Martin was leaving everything that was familiar to him to seek a better future for his family. Just imagine this brood making the long sea crossing over the rough Atlantic and through the Gulf to New Orleans, where they entered the United States. Apparently, they signed their names and said, go ahead. That was it. That's about it. They had heard of the promise, you know, in 1844, they had heard that there was going to be very inexpensive or even free land in Texas. And see, that was part of the political trouble at the time. Texas was trying to establish itself as an independent country and then join the United States. Texas needed more, you know, Anglo citizens. Otherwise, it was just a big empty state. So they were even going to give away free land to immigrants, which was very impressive to Europeans. But unfortunately, when Martin and his family arrived in Brownsville, they found out that a war was about to be starting, and there were lots of troops just west of Brownsville. So they had to, after getting to Brownsville, they had to retreat after just a few weeks to New Orleans, where they had arrived, to make a new plan. So that plan was that they took a steamboat up the Mississippi River. They didn't know where they were going. They went first briefly to Iowa, and then they finally found an opportunity in Illinois where a widow sold them a farm, and they were able to then farm. An important note is that the details of the steamboat trip up the Mississippi River in 1846, the details in the book really give the reader the sense of actually taking this trip along with this family as they gradually learn more about America, such that there are slave states as well as free states, which was a bizarre thing for them. It was confusing because there were also multiple paper currencies circulating all through the United States and in different towns that they would visit. So this was very strange. There were many new opportunities, but also dangers of various types. Now, the second character I want to mention is Martin's wife, Margaret, who was also a real person. That was her name. A lot of people in this book are highly intelligent, and that was the case for Margaret. She was well known for being able to shape a discussion to win just about any argument. So as they were making their way on their adventure and trying to figure out where to live, her husband knew that if she insisted strongly on a course of action, he knew she was probably right, so he would just say yes.
I can relate.
She was a superb mother to her eight children, and when Martin suddenly died in 1853, Margaret had the sense to quickly and fearlessly make key decisions about selling the farm and then moving the family eventually to Quincy. I want to mention two other characters, if I could, real quickly.
Yes.
So Martin and Margaret had a son. Remember, they had six girls and two boys. So the older boy was John Metzger, and he was my great-grandfather.
Really?
He was 3 years old during the voyage to America. And it turned out, as he grew up, he was extremely bright, and he easily learned to read at a young age. And as he looked at the old newspapers sitting on his father's knee, he was fascinated by tales of local cholera epidemics, something that we don't have in the United States anymore.
Correct.
Lethal epidemics that would come and go for unknown reasons. Also, he was fascinated by the California Gold Rush, which was occurring when he was a youngster. And also, they were right on the Mississippi, and so he was really interested in the efforts to build bridges across the Mississippi. There were no bridges across the Mississippi, but the railroad was very interested in building bridges. So the railroad built bridges, but the steamboat companies were worried. They were very powerful and wealthy. They didn't want the railroads to put the steamboat companies out of business. So the steamboat companies fought having any bridges built. And in fact, when the first bridge that was ever built across the Mississippi River at Rock Island, Illinois, within 2 weeks, a steamboat was loaded full of explosives and was steered into the bridge.
Oops.
And burned it down.
Wow.
And that led to many lawsuits, and it led, actually, true story, to the U.S. Supreme Court about the control of navigation on rivers. And the Supreme Court, it was actually, these lawsuits went to the Supreme Court multiple times, and sanity eventually prevailed, and bridges were allowed to be built across the major rivers in the United States as long as navigational accommodations were made that would allow tall ships to pass.
Wow.
Young John also was, as he was growing up then, sort of elementary school age, he was always asking questions. And he was like the smartest little boy in the little schoolhouse. And his high intelligence drew the attention of local politicians. And then Abraham Lincoln visited Quincy several times. And even Abraham Lincoln met John and took an interest in him. Of course, Lincoln, he visited in October 1858, which was the first time. It was 1854 or so was the first time that Lincoln visited. And that's when he first met John when he was really little. John saw Lincoln again in October 1858 when the sixth debate between Abraham Lincoln and Stephen Douglas occurred in Quincy.
Fascinating.
Of course, 2 years later, in 1860, John was 18, and he had to decide, since the war was started, what his service should be. And this prompted, according to my little records that I found, a lot of difficult conversations with his family because they thought he was going to get himself killed. He had, by that time, at age 18, a love interest, Elizabeth, Elizabeth Cooter, who he then married years later. She was also highly intelligent and a very attractive young lady. She did not want him to join the army, and also his mother was very cautious about it. He found a way to participate to the war effort, to contribute to the war effort without being a frontline soldier, which is an interesting story in the book. He later became a quite successful businessman in Quincy, and then really a major businessman in Quincy, which is why I have photographs, because it was really unusual for families to take photographs in the 19th century, late 19th century. Now, you go to a restaurant, take a picture of your food.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But in those days, most people had never had a photograph. Well, okay, the last character. So I talked about Martin, his wife Margaret, and their son, John, who was my great-grandfather.
Right.
The last major character in the book is Eilish MacArthur, an Irish woman. She was a farm girl born in 1885. She's distantly related to the Metzger family through her stepfather. And it turned out Eilish had a brilliant mathematical mind, and she ended up later going to the University of Chicago. But she had started with her education in a small rural schoolhouse, minimal education. She became an excellent reader, explored books on her own. Unfortunately, she was orphaned at age 7, and she's Irish. But they on the farm, there were two German workers, a man and his wife, and they just adopted this girl, Eilish, and then took care of her. And, of course, Eilish actually had a little brother as well. Surprisingly, after she was orphaned, the family got a letter from John D. Rockefeller. Very mysterious. They had no clue why John D. Rockefeller would be writing to them. He was in Cleveland, you know, the big oil baron. And he offered financial support to Eilish and her younger brother, full scholarships to the University of Chicago.
Incredible.
Rockefeller had just founded that university in 1892. And of course, I actually, years later, I went there as well in the 1970s. So Eilish gets smarter every year, and she actually turned into a beautiful blonde-haired, blue-eyed Irish girl by age 15, and that caused her some trouble because it drew a lot of unwanted attention and complicated her interactions by men. The last thing I'll say about Eilish is that, so she gained entrance to the university in Chicago in 1901. And then she actually had a series of astonishing adventures and misadventures that close out the book. For example, just one, she was mistakenly believed to be an accomplice in the assassination of President William McKinley in September 1901.
Fascinating.
So that's quite a story, and you'll just have to read the book.
Fascinating story. As you've outlined these principal characters, they certainly are people I'd like to be acquainted with, or wish they were part of my family. Of course, if I'd been writing the book, they probably would have been super wealthy and passed all their extra money along to me. I don't know if maybe they did that to you. I don't know. Was there a challenge in writing this? This is because it's over 300 pages in length, and there is some historical references included in this book. There are historical references. Was it a challenge for you?
There was a challenging part and a fun part. The challenging part was the extensive research required to provide highly accurate details. So there's a lot in the book about Abraham Lincoln, and many of those details are not widely known. This book was reviewed by a prominent Lincoln scholar who wrote a review that's I printed near the title page in the book. It was a pre-publication review. And he really gives high praise to this book. And then there are other major academic historians who reviewed the book and also provided reviews. So the big challenge was to provide highly accurate details about anything that I said. The fun part was that many of these characters in the book were persons who actually lived and who I know what decisions they made because they moved here and then they moved there and they did this or they did that. So I know what decisions they made. So, but I didn't have any tape recordings of any of their conversations. So the fun part was knowing what these people actually did and the decisions they made. I put words into their mouths to reconstruct conversations with the knowledge that I was making up their conversations, but they're very likely to have been similar to the conversations that actually took place.
Wow. I understand also at the end of this novel, of this adventure, you included a short story. You just weren't done writing. Tell a little of that, and how is that all
after
about?
After I retired, I was 65 and I retired. My first grandchild was on the way, so my wife encouraged me to retire. So I started writing short stories, and I had trouble getting them accepted to magazines.
Okay.
And I had one left over. My novel, if you talk to a publishing company, they say, well, yeah, we'd be interested in seeing a novel. We may not like it, but it should be 90,000 words long. Well, I finished writing my book. I was pretty satisfied with it. It was 73,000 words. And actually, a lot of readers will like it. It's a little shorter than a typical novel, but it's packed full of stuff.
Yes.
So it's 73,000 words. But it's a little short to publish a book, so I needed another, let's say, 5,000, 8,000 words to keep the publisher happy. So I, and here's the quick one-minute summary. I had a great story of a young man who's studying at Columbia University in 2011, and he's very smart, and he's interested in physics, but he's required to take some sort of social class, sociology classes or whatever, and so with social sciences. So he takes an anthropology class, and he meets a girl, of course, from Romania, who's attending Columbia. That's another great school in New York. And she is actually a mathematician, but she's also required to take a sociology type course. And she's from Romania, and she's doing her little project in that class on tarot cards, because that's a sort of a superstitious habit common in Eastern Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And so she decides to give, as she's writing up this project for her anthropology class, she has this interesting boy come into her dorm room, and they're going to light a candle, and then she's going to do his tarot card reading. Well, it turns out, as she turns over the cards, it says that he's going to travel. This boy is going to travel. And that he'll take a long trip, and that he'll meet a terrible monster, which, you know, that's pretty astonishing. And that the two students there doing this reader will eventually become lovers. So that was pretty astonishing tarot reading. And that stage sets the stage for the dramatic events that then follow in that short story. Because, of course, he does meet a monster, but not the type of monster that you might envision in a Frankenstein movie, but he is a real monster and a very serious one, overcomes that challenge, and then, of course, there's a happy ending with the couple getting together at the end.
It sounds like a foundation for another novel. I don't know if you're going to explore their history or not, but with your curiosity and your creative ability, there's no telling what the future might hold. This book is titled Curious Exploits, A Family Seeks Success in 19th Century America, and my guest author, Dr. James A. Magner. Sir, where can we get copies of this?
Just look on Amazon. That's the easiest, although major bookstores may also have it. But I tried to make the book as inexpensive as possible. I think the paperback is, it's currently like a little more than $20. But I told the publisher to please make the price as cheap as possible. There's also an ebook for $3.99.
Fabulous.
So Amazon is the best place to go.
And listeners, you can do a search under the author's name, James A. Magner. Find out about this book. Get some excerpts, I think, on Amazon. Maybe paragraphs of some of the characters that will show up on Amazon. And also do some future research in the event of another follow-up novel that may encompass not only these characters, or maybe some new ones. So thank you, Doctor, for joining me today and sharing your story. I've enjoyed the visit.
Okay, thanks.
My pleasure. Indie Book Publishing, Archway Press. This is J. Douglas Barker.
You
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing. Join us again.